And in 1995, I was in a psychiatric institution with major anxiety disorder, panic disorder, PTSD, and depression. So welcome to the conference. I'm so happy you're here.
And so I don't mean to be flip, I really don't, but it's my story and I'm not ashamed, I'm not embarrassed. It's why I'm here with you today.
I am Tammy West and that is my story. Welcome to Consider Yourself Hugged, a place to find comfort and support as you navigate your mental and emotional well-being. So sit back and relax, unless you're driving, and get ready for this week's hug. So this is me hitting record before I'm even ready. Because, welcome fellow huggers, hug maniacs, hug meisters. Okay, I'll stop with that now. The reason I was saying that this is me recording before I was even totally ready is because about an hour ago, I spent 40 minutes doing this, what I thought was a pretty epic episode, and I didn't hit record. And I've never done that before, but I decided that from here on out, the second I sit down, I'm hitting record, and then I'll just edit out. Like a minute ago, I was actually pulling my pants up, pulling my shirt down. You probably didn't need to see that, so I edited that out. I'm so glad you're here, and you're just going to have to let me just talk for a few minutes, and I'm guessing that if you didn't like that style, you wouldn't keep coming back, but let's see. What was I going to tell you about? Yeah, last week was really a weird week, and two things happened that I want to share with you. But before I do, hi, Leslie. Okay, and if you're wondering why I'm saying hi, Leslie, a friend of mine, Leslie, we don't really get to see each other very often, but we saw each other just a few days ago, and she said, sorry, my camera is doing that thing again where I just need to sit still because it's zooming and not zooming and trying to focus. But she said, you know, I listen every week, I listen to your podcast. So, Leslie, this sounds like a big trick, doesn't it? I'm like, should I edit this out? And I'm like, no, she's my friend. So say hello. So I know that you're really with me every week. And then I'll feel your presence, regardless of whether anybody else is listening or not. But I also thought it was weird. Like, she knows everything about my life. Now, one of the things she doesn't know, but the other she already does. So here's the two things. Last week, I think it was on Thursday, I got the second shingles vaccine. So I had the first one a couple months ago. I am 59. Y'all know I'm not young. And it hurt because vaccines go in the muscle. They don't like go in the fatty fat of your Botox. They go in the muscle. So it really hurt. So I go in to get the second one. The first one, I didn't feel sick or anything. My arm hurt, but I didn't feel sick. So I go in to get the second one and I'm scared. I mean, it hurt. And so I'm scared. And so I see the pharmacist because we get them at Kroger. And the one I had the first time was a male pharmacist. That's all I remember. But this was a female. And so we go back and my husband is like sitting there before I go back. And he says to her, she's really scared. So we go in and I tell her, I said, last week or the last time I was here and had the shot, it really hurt. It was a man. I don't know. I said, but I saw you standing back there and you look so nice. And I thought, oh, this is good. It won't hurt. Because sometimes if you like tell people you're scared, they'll be much more gentle with you. And you know what she said to me? She said, oh, you'll be all right. Oh, you'll be all right. And I was like, okay, that's not, it was almost like she was saying, don't be a baby. It did hurt. Okay. Number one, it hurt even more. Maybe this was a buddy of hers and I offended her. I don't know, but it hurt. And then we go home and as the night went on, I didn't really think that I was feeling bad, but my husband kept asking me if I was okay. So we go to bed and I was so sick, like all night long. The first thing was the shivers, the chills. I was like rolled up in a ball in the bed. I was putting the covers around me and I could not, like the shaking was not voluntary. It was just my body trying to warm up. And I kept thinking, I know I need to get up and take some ibuprofen, but I can't get out of these covers. Finally, in the middle of the night, at some point, I started feeling nauseous or nauseated, whatever the word is. And at that point, I thought, okay, it's not the vaccine. I'm sick. And above all, Tim loves me and he will stay with me through thick and thin, but not a stomach virus. So I got up and I went into, I took some ibuprofen because listen, not only was I freezing and shaking, my head was exploding, my arm was just killing me, and now I'm nauseous. So I took the ibuprofen, and then I remembered that when I fell and hit my head, do y'all remember that? This is like my life. At the emergency room, they gave me that under the tongue nausea medicine in case, you know, you need it with a concussion. Oh, hello, kitty. And I remembered I had it and I was so feeling so sick. So I used one, it didn't help. I used another. And finally that was able, it was probably 4 or 5 in the morning before I finally fell asleep on the sofa. I was just so, so sick. And the next day I got up and took my temperature and it was 100.3 on ibuprofen. So I'm assuming it was higher in the night. And for me, that's a big deal because my normal body temperature is like 97 and I haven't had a fever in years. So I'm so sick. And the next night I was sick again, not quite as bad, but I was still sick. And finally, after that, it was over. And I'm thinking, is there a point to this? And there is, but let me tell you my second story. The eclipse. So I live in Middle Tennessee. Back in 2017, when the full solar eclipse, when the eclipse happened in 2017, Tim and I were in California and in the path of totality was Gallatin, Tennessee, where we lived. So we didn't get to experience it at all. I mean, I was in an airplane when it happened. He was somewhere in California. It was just like, if you looked up with the glasses, it was a sliver, but it was nothing. I've been so excited about this total eclipse for probably a year. And I'm going to say 6 or 8 months ago, I asked my friends and Tim, I was like, listen, we're going to be at 95% here, but in Paducah, which is just 2 hours away, it's 100%. So I mentioned it to the kids. My son wanted to come home and unfortunately he couldn't because flights were really expensive. I bought glasses 6 or 8 months ago, but no one really wanted to go. So the time gets closer and no one wants to go. And then all of the reports were, it was probably going to be cloudy. The Kentucky, you know, government was talking about hours, lines of traffic, bring extra food, bring extra water. And I'm thinking that is not Tim's thing. So I thought, well, it might be cloudy. It's going to be 95% here. We just won't go. So we didn't go. And we were inside of a building, actually in Gallatin. We live about 30 minutes from that town now. And it was cloudy and we're driving home. And as we get back towards where we live, the clouds had broken. So we did use the glasses. It did get kind of dark, but just like thunderstorm dark. And then with the glasses, you could see it was about 90% eclipse. And so it was cool. But then I got on Facebook and saw that Paducah was 100% sunny. It was beautiful. It got completely dark. And I was just so upset. I was disappointed. I was angry. You know, I was angry at just everything. And so what is my point? Well, let me tell you what we're talking about today. And then the thing is, I just wanted to share those stories with you because no one else wants to hear them. And I can make a point as well. We are in part 2 of Stress Awareness Month. And so I dug in and I'll explain all that to you in just a minute, but we are going to talk about today, women and family responsibilities. And as I thought about these two stories, there really is a lesson to be learned because I'm like, what is the lesson? When I go through like stinky stuff, I'm like, what is the lesson? Well, as far as the sickness, the lesson is I did take care of myself. I mean, I didn't clean the house that day. I didn't load the dishwasher. I didn't cook. I didn't work. I mean, I was sick. Maybe I was being a baby, but I don't ever get a fever. I just felt so bad. Now, if you are a mom of young children, maybe you have infants, maybe you have toddlers. Okay. And did I say a minute ago, I am focusing on women today. I'll explain that in just a minute. But you're probably thinking, well, good for you. I can't do that. And I mean, you're right. You're right. I remember, you know, I was married before and I remember my husband at the time, we both had a stomach virus and so did our 3 children. I don't know how old they were, but I think we had a baby and then maybe a 2 or a 4-year-old. I mean, they were little and we were all sick. And I don't remember a lot of things, but I remember lying on the floor, like crawling from the bathroom to the kitchen because I had to take care of my children, especially the baby. I had to. So you're 100% right. But as I've talked about before, don't let that be your whole life where you don't take care of yourself because you have to take care of everybody else, because that's a lie. And that's what's causing a lot of women this anxiety. So what I guess my point with that is there are stages of life. And unfortunately, we don't get to practice them most of the time. You know, I want us to try to learn in that stage of life. So moms of young children, that physical part of caring for your kids and having to put yourself second in every way is not forever. Now, that moves into more like emotional and mental things with your children, but there are stages. And I want you to have hope that at some point you can get sick and take care of yourself. And the eclipse, here's my lesson on that. I was a big old baby. If I wanted to go, I should have gone. I mean, no one said you can't. Tim didn't say, no, I don't want to do that. I won't go. I made the decision that it wasn't going to be like, I wanted everyone around me to be excited and want to do it. And so I used the weather as an excuse just to be a big baby and not go. I'm not going to do that next time. Now, the next full solar eclipse is in 2026 in Spain, Iceland, and Greenland. And then in 2033, it's in Alaska. So I'm just telling you now, I'm putting it out there. One of those times, I'm going, and I don't care who goes with me. You with me? Amen. I'm preaching. All right. So that's all of my stories for today. And I need to look and think, okay, so how did we get here? How did I get to this decision where I want to just talk to you as women? By the way, if you're a man, please don't check out. Still listen, because the advice I'm giving is broad. It expands genders. And also there are women in your life that this might be able to help you just really make a difference in their lives. So it started, I was listening to a podcast a few days ago. I like to listen to other like mental and emotional well-being stress podcasts to find out what's out there. And this one I did like. I liked her style. She was storytelling too. I liked listening to her. I liked her content. But there was the weirdest thing that struck me. And I'm going to tell you, I wrote it down exactly what she said and why it struck me. She was talking about journaling. And she said, when we put our worries onto paper, it moves them from the emotion center to the thinking center. And then she moved on, like she was giving advice. And I've given advice like that before and just moved on. But I found myself as the listener thinking, okay, but what does that look like? Give me a story. Give me an example. Don't just give me 1, 2, 3, 4. And that sentence, for some reason, just really stayed with me. So what I want today to be about is some research. So we're going to talk about first some like how did I get to this whole talking about women, and then some research articles, not boring, I promise, fun and interesting, and then some stories and then some tips. And so I hope that, you know, when I recorded this the first time, I was like, oh, this is great. I mean, I just like shared from my heart. And then I was so angry that I didn't record. But anyway, I'm sharing from my heart again today. So today we are going to tell the stories and talk about what it looks like to do the things that I'm going to ask you to do. So first, I dug in to that. Remember that Stress in America report that I talked to you about last week? I sent you the link. I looked through that and I was like, what do people need? What are they struggling with? And as you may expect, the struggle, the numbers were worse for women than for men. Now, this is all self-report, but it still seemed to be worse for women than men. So then I looked at the top stressors. I'm air quoting because you all know how I feel about the word, but according to women, the top three. And they were 58% said family responsibility, 50% said they were consumed by worries about money, and 49% said relationships. So that's what we're doing for the next 3 weeks. We are going to focus on women, even though it'll help everybody. Today is family relationships. Next week, or family responsibilities. Next week is money. And the next week is relationships in general. And, you know, I'm always thinking about my content and things like that. And I was in an airport, been 2 or 3 weeks ago, and there was a family there, a young family. It was a mom and a dad. And I think there were 3 young kids. And I'm guessing they were like preschool, early school age. And I was watching them. And the mom, and I wrote the things down. The mom was organizing and distributing food, chatting with them, trying to take a bite of her oatmeal, mediating an argument between the children at one point, and ensuring their safety, keeping them from running off. And the dad, I don't want this to be a stereotype, you know, I really don't, but he was literally leaning back on his phone. And I think the woman caught me looking at them at one point. And I said, I'm sorry. I said, I just love to watch mom's mom. And I am a person who, listen, I'm not apologizing for this. I believe that women and men are biologically equipped in different ways. Women are the gender who we are equipped to bear children, regardless of whether we bear children or not, that makes our bodies different from men's. And so there, the things, though, that go into a lifetime of like gender things, it's not just biology, it's religion, it's culture, it's how you were raised, it's all kinds of things. And I get that. However, I'm still standing by my belief that there are differences. So the next thing I did, okay, so first I dove into the Stress in America report, discovered the numbers were worse for women than men, looked at the top issues for women, and then chose those top 3. Now, the next thing I did then was look at some research. Funny thing, I rarely entertain pre-pandemic studies. I mean, depending on what the content is, but I'm like, if a study was done on like stress on women in 2018, I'm like, yeah, no. So all the things I'm going to talk to you about are post-pandemic. And I think I have 1, 2, 3, just 4. Okay, 4 that I wanted to mention. I'm not going to read the whole study. I will put the link in the show notes. A few of them are actual research articles you probably don't want to go download and read, but maybe you do because you love research. But the first one is titled, Doing It All, Effects of Family Responsibilities and Marital Relationship Quality on Mother's Ambulatory Blood Pressure, ABP. And that basically just means blood pressure when you're up moving. I got to move all my things around. And this just comes from the conclusion. Mother's perception of equity in the division of childcare responsibilities contribute to lower ABP. Additionally, mothers in supportive marital relationships had lower ABP than those in ambivalent, you know, unclear relationships. So this talks about if we feel as moms, okay, not everything I'm talking about today is about moms, by the way, but this is, it's part of family responsibility, is it could be that you have children. So mothers who perceive that there's equity in caring for the children have lower blood pressure. That's a medical thing. Okay, the second one, holding the belief that gender roles can change reduces women's work-family conflict. Now, you'll notice these first two, and actually the next one too, are about our perceptions. This doesn't mean that I'm saying to you, we'll just change the way that you think, but it is part of it. So here's what they said. In this research, we demonstrated the impact that these mindsets have on anticipated and experienced work-family conflict. So meaning that having the belief that gender roles can't change makes it worse for women, whereas the belief that they can is better. The third one. This is the last one that's about perception, but I found this one to be intriguing because we think, okay, 2024, men are, they're woke, right? And we have feminists and there's gender equality. And I also, I want to make sure I mention these are single research articles. So you can probably go out there and find whatever information that you want, but these do come from real research articles. The title is, Difference in Perceiving Role of men and women among Gen X and Gen Z in current society. So Gen X is like my age, 1964 and earlier, you know, birth dates, older people. And then Gen Z, I don't remember the cutoff, but these are like our 20s young people. So you would think that my age would perceive more gender role differences than someone who's 20 or 22. But it says, the research suggests there is no significant difference on the views of gender role beliefs among Gen X and Gen Z. Both are inclined towards traditional gender role beliefs. Now, again, I believe in the gender differences. I'm not saying every woman is cut out to like emotionally be just a nurturing, wonderful mom. But overall, many women who are moms, they embrace that role. Even if it's hard, they embrace that role. But it is interesting to see that at least this research shows that as far as traditional gender roles and what you do during the day, whether it's childcare duties or not just being a mom. Sorry, I said being a mom, but cleaning the house or whatever it is, it's interesting to see that the perception hasn't changed. And again, there's so much that goes into this. Religion, culture, all the things. But the last one I want to talk about, the title is Women and Stress. And this is the American Heart Association. Remember I said that the Stress in America report indicated that, because we're post-pandemic, that women, the numbers for women are worse than men. So let me read a few things to you. According to their study, that women faced more stress during the pandemic because they increased their responsibilities by schooling children at home and caring for sick family members. They dealt with more unemployment or worked in jobs that didn't offer paid time off for sick days. They were the majority of the health workforce enduring the emotional toll of being on the front line and having close contact with sick patients. They experienced more domestic violence. They struggled with reduced access to quality health services. They adhered to these changing medical protocols during pregnancy, and they encountered more inequities based on their race and their age. So women experienced a lot. All right, are you with me? I started by kind of sharing with you why I decided to go this route, how I dug into the Stress in America report, taking those top three, and then looking today at family responsibilities, looking at some research about that. And now let's talk a little bit about the issue of family responsibilities. So the next thing I did is I thought about, well, what do I have to offer? Like, what experience do I have in this field? What credibility do I have? So I made a list. Here's my list. If you're watching on YouTube, it's right there. I had a lot of things to talk to you about today. So let me tell you the things that I think give me some credibility in this field. I had three biological children who were born within 4 years, 1988 to 1992. My first son was born when my husband at the time was in the military. We were in Wichita, Kansas. We had zero support, no family there, and we had made no friends. So I was all by myself while he was working these 12-hour shifts, and my son was very colicky. All right. I was in the mental hospital when my kids were 2, 4, and 6. I was a single mom of those three kids from 1998 to 2003. Okay. During that time, I got my master's degree. I married Tim. I gained 5 stepchildren. So I went from 3 to 8. I worked after I quit teaching, which was in 2005. In 2006, while 5 of those kids were still living at home, I began working the public seminar route, and I was gone 2 or 3 weeks a month trying to parent. I took care of my mentally ill mother with dementia while I was traveling and while children were still at home. That's called the sandwich generation. You guys might know about that. And then finally, I cared for my father who had Alzheimer's. So I'm not saying, you know, pat on the back, but I just wanted you to know I've been through a lot of different things with family responsibilities. So then I thought, well, what do I have to offer? But you know what? I had to back up and I had to ask myself, What did I do poorly? And this is not about self-deprecation. This is not about giving credit where credit is due. But I love this. There's this book I love called Bad Girls of the Bible. And I think a lot of us learn better from what people didn't do well than what they did do well. So I thought I would start there. So here's what I did poorly. First of all, I yelled, apparently, according to my children, a lot. Second, I never said no or asked for help. Third, I expected myself and others to be perfect. Okay, I hear some of y'all out there like saying, oh, you know, and raising your hands. That's either to praise God or to say that you were the perfectionist. You know, when you live in a perfectionist state of mind, you don't just expect it from yourself, you expect it from everybody. Next, I put too much on my plate. You know, when I said that I got my master's degree during that time, here's what I didn't share. Actually, prior to that, when I decided I wanted to be a teacher, I had two courses that I needed before I could get my teacher certification. I needed and then I had to student teach full time. So all at one time, I was pregnant. I had two children, three and under two. I was student teaching full time. I had a part-time job and I was taking those two classes. That was not okay. Sure, I got A's in the classes, but it was not okay. I had put too much on my plate. Next, I had unrealistic expectations. For example, putting too much on my plate, I did well in the classes. I did not do well in my life. Next, I had buried and apparent resentment and anger in my life. Let's look at all the things because I wanted to be perfect. I wanted you to be perfect. I put too much on my plate. I had unrealistic. So then I was angry at everybody. And then I yelled. And then finally, and I know my youngest son, Michael, listens to my podcast pretty regularly. So Michael, I'm going to explain this in just a minute. I saw my family as, quote, extra to my life. I'll come back to that in just a minute. So these are the things that I did poorly. And I put 1, 2, 3, 4. So there was 7 of them. So then I was like, okay, what did I do well? And I only have 5. Again, not self-deprecating. It's just true. But those 5 fall under one phrase. Are you ready? Write this down. What did I do well? It's all in caps. I got help. Period. And help means a lot of things. So here are the things that I did well. First, I got a therapist when I got divorced. Remember, I promised you earlier that I wanted to give you examples and I wanted to give you a story and I wanted to show you what it looked like. So when I got divorced was the first time other than the therapist that I had to have assigned after my mental hospital stay. But when I got divorced, I was there with 3 children. I was teaching all day. I was all by myself. So I went to this wonderful therapist who remained my therapist until she died. But she gave me this. This is the one thing I wanted to show you what it looked like. This may speak to you. It may not. But this was the big piece of advice I remember giving me. She asked me to pick something that just I couldn't stand, you know, trying to deal with children. And it was, I remember it being leaving their clothes and socks all over the floor. And so she said, this is what you're going to do. You're going to start with one thing at a time like that. And you're going to say to your kids, because they were old enough for me to do this, say to them, when you pick up your clothes like this, and you might have to remind them, then we are going to spend an extra 10 minutes reading together. So her point with this was pick a battle and then choose something that is meaningful to them and to you. And that was so helpful to me. And so if you have a counselor that's not actually giving you wisdom and advice, I'm just going to say, find another one. The second thing that I did, I asked for help. Okay, so here's the No. I let my family help is something that I did not ask for help, but I let my family help. So my mom never remarried. And you might know from just former episodes, it was a very contentious relationship, mental health issues, all that. But she loved my children. My sister was not married at the time, didn't have any kids. She loved my children. They wanted to spend time with my children. So this is how I was able to go back to school. They loved spending time. They loved being together. And this reminded me of something else I wanted to share with you too. So, you know, Tim and I have the adopted kids, he adopted them and I step-parented them, but they're grown with their families now. Well, Melinda, she and her family live locally, about 30 minutes away. Josh and his family have lived away for about 10 years in like Mississippi and Dallas, and they finally made the decision to move home. I think it was in January, but their house won't be ready until end of April, 1st of May. Well, Mindy and John Mark, they have I'm going to say 2,500 square foot home. They have two children, so it's four of them. They have allowed Josh and Larissa and their 1, 2, 3, 4 children to stay with them January, February, March, April. So like 5 months. So there's 10 people under that rooftop. Now, listen, under that roof, however you say it. Listen, there are many cultures who live that way. They share the joys. They share the burdens. They take care of things together. They do the household duties together, the griefs and the hard times. Now, I know that comes with it a whole nother set of issues. But what I'm saying here is, Mindy, we went to one of the grandkids' volleyball games the other day, and I was just talking to Mindy, whose home it is, and just by herself. And she said, yeah, I'm going to miss them when they're gone. You know, I've enjoyed it. And I think about the time when I was alone with three kids, alone, and I didn't really reach out for help. My family did help take care of my children, but I was lonely the times when I was by myself. But I did let them help. The next one, I took on a new view of family. Okay, Michael, this is where I revisit what I said before. So at this point, when I was looking at my family as extra, and I didn't know I was doing that until I opened up to it. So I was traveling 2 or 3 weeks a month. And with the seminar route, I would fly out on a Sunday, fly home on a Friday. I was driving from hotel to hotel, speaking all day long. It was really a rough life, although it was great and I learned a lot from it, but it was very taxing physically and mentally. So I would be at the end of the day, I would be tired. I was speaking all day, and then the kids would call. Now, I think at that point, one of them, probably Michael, was living at home. The others maybe were in college or, I don't know, grown. But they would call me, and I would be so tired. And I would talk to them, and I would just be like, oh, gosh. And then it occurred to me that I was viewing my family as being an addition to my life, if not consciously. But instead of viewing it as this is part of my world, part of my day, it was like, oh, this is an extra thing I have to deal with. And so what I did well is to finally realize that I needed to take a new view. My family was my purpose. My family was my reason. My family was why I was out there trying to work and earn a living and grow and leave a legacy. They weren't in addition to. So I did that well. And then two more. I learned by accident. It's kind of a funny thing to say, but while I was doing the seminar route, we had to sell books from the back of the room. And so I would read them. It was about communication and emotions. And even though I'd been in counseling, which was wonderful, these were like skill books, you know, how to speak up, how to say no, how to set boundaries. And I started learning that I could ask for help or talk about things that were difficult to me to other people. I'm not saying I'm perfect at it, but I did learn, but it was by accident. And the last one, which I think is just part of what we need to do to get through this life, is I matured. I'm so much more equipped now at 59 than I was at 20. But maturing still involves choices. So we don't want to mature and just look older. Like right now, I'm looking at myself at the, you know, I'm 59 and I decided maybe a year ago to start going natural. And you, if you're watching, you can see where sort of the blonde highlights are like growing out here and all natural is starting to grow in. But I don't want to mature and just look that way. I want to be that way. And that comes from learning and growing. So those are the things that I did well. And I'm hoping by laying the groundwork, how I came to what I'm going to talk about today, the research, the stories, what I didn't do well, what I did do well, how I've lived as far as family responsibilities. So I want to try to take those things and package it into just the five things, which really I've already told you. I just want to put them into five pieces of wisdom and advice. The first one is get professional help. Professional help can mean a lot of things. It can mean, You may work for a company that has an employee assistance program. Please be a part of that. You know, I speak for an employee assistance program and I love it so much. Get help. Could be BetterHelp, Calm, all the, not Calm, Headspace, all the ones that have like online counseling, in-person counseling. I went back into counseling last year. I'm now out for a season, but my counselor knows I'll be back if I feel like things are, you know, I went back on medication. I'm beginning the possible wean off, but get professional help if you're struggling. Second, ask for help. Family and friends. You know, I wish looking back that I had not spent 5 years of my life being so lonely. And I wish that I did form a friend network, by the way. I did. Most of them were single. Find friends that can share the burden with you. You know, if you have children or you're caring for a parent, find people who can help you. The third one is adjust your view of family, just like I told you, and make smart choices. One of the smart choices I made, it was so wonderful. I would call my kids while I was driving from place to place. That way I was having the conversation in a time where it was a million other things not going on around me. The next one, learn on purpose. So remember I told you I learned on accident. Think about, do you need to ask for help and why aren't you doing that? Is there language that you can use? Learn on purpose. And the last one, be patient as the seasons change. If you're caring for a small child, if you're caring for a parent, if you're not caring for people, but you're trying to care for a home, seasons change. We learn, we grow. Try to remember that as you go through and you're learning and doing all the things that we will mature. We will mature the way that we look. So hopefully we will mature the way that we think and we feel as well. I hope that was helpful to you. In my head, I'm thinking, was that as good as my first recording? I don't know, but it was definitely from the heart. So next week, we will talk about money. And the week after, we will talk about relationships. I'm so honored that you continue to spend time with me. I'm so glad that you're here. Please continue to download and share and like and subscribe to grow our community. Please comment on the show notes, on the Facebook page, wherever it is that you listen and get your information, all that. I hope that you will do that. Be part, follow me on Facebook, join my private women's group on Facebook. All of that is in the show notes. And that's all I have. And so until we are together next time, consider yourself hugged.